I think that the S&P will be closer to 3,000 than 4,000 before it's all done.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Thanks for joining us for part two of our interview with Federal Reserve expert Danielle DiMartino Booth. If you haven't yet watched part one of this discussion with Danielle, in which she shares her concerns that a systemic crisis will be triggered by the Fed's aggressive tightening policies, head over to our channel at youtube.com/Wealthion and watch it there first. It sets the context for the investment themes we discuss in this video. Danielle also shares the strategies that she recommends for investors to follow to successfully protect their capital through the rough ride she sees ahead, so be sure to stick around for that. Okay, let's get started watching part two of our interview with Danielle DiMartino Booth.
The Fed's breaking developed economies. That's a new trick. That takes me to whether or not he is trying to break the Fed put, which is something that I've spoken about recently. And that will take his continuing to go down this path at very, very high risk of creating a global, we're in a global recession. The question is there going to be a global financial crisis? Mm-hmm. And that's the risk at this point. It's not, there's no question of recession. I mean, there are a few people left on the sell side who are, they're holding on for dear life. I understand it's your job.
Yeah, we call them the magical thinkers, but okay, yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's, but the question is, will there be a Minsky moment? Will there be something that is systemic and global in nature?
All right. So the question about the Fed was, so I mentioned briefly earlier, Fed pivot, right? So we just talked about all the slowing stuff. So if the Fed does pivot, do you expect that that is going to be able to change the game very much? Is it going to pull us out of this recession and make it a shallow recession? I mean, we had a kind of blink and you miss it recession back in 2020 because of all the crazy stimulus. Or is it going to be harder for the Fed to dig us out of this one this time?
Well, the Fed cannot go at it alone. At least it couldn't with COVID.
And do you mean it needs the other central banks or do you mean it needs Congress?
It needs Congress.
Okay. And we just said it's going to be harder for Congress this time around, right?
Especially with these borrowing expenses. I don't think the Fed can go at it alone. I would hope that my theory that Jay Powell thinks that the zero bound is not a good thing sticks. That would make it that much harder on a recovery. Adam, we're just going to have to wait and see. I do know that this is a potentially monumental moment to bring about the central clearing of treasuries. Because you have to have a crisis to push through something like that.
Right.
So, and Gensler's been talking about it. The SEC's been making rumblings about it. They're starting to try and reform the deepest, most liquid market in the world.
Okay. Well, I want to dig into that, but we just don't have enough time because that's a topic that's worth its own long discussion on. So let me pivot from that to the markets at this point. So what is your current market outlook? And from what we've been talking about, I'm going to guess it's not super rosy in the near term.
No, in the near term, it's not, mainly because, we still have kind of crazy valuations. And it's just a fact of life.
Yeah, those forward earnings estimates haven't come down yet.
The earnings estimates have not come down to a great enough. They certainly don't reflect what the dollar is going to do to earnings. I don't foresee a reason, given what the Federal Reserve has told us, given the how widespread the global recession is, I don't necessarily see a reason for optimism about risky assets right now. We haven't even seen a default cycle take hold yet. I mean, we're seeing some leveraged buyouts. We're seeing some paper that backed them price at some truly high yields. They're high, they're double digits. So we're beginning to see the distress.
Right, right. But we're talking about the Fed hiking till something breaks. You know, we've got 20%+ of corporate America that's categorized as a zombie company. We haven't seen too many players stumble there yet, right? Yes. I mean, and we would expect to, right? So you're basically saying, in terms of innings, seems like we're still in relatively early innings in terms of what could happen here.
Well, and again, especially because nothing has really broken in the repo market. So the financial system seems to be holding up, you know, right now. So there's not a reason to rush in emergency style.
Right. Well, even worse, to your point from earlier, since the Fed typically looks at mostly lagging indicators, it's looking at that data and saying, we got plenty of runway to keep hiking.
Well, and I think that I think Powell, if you were to give Powell truth serum, he would tell you he's leaning on those lagging indicators on purpose.
Right, right.
Just so he
like the jobs market, you know, hey, you know, he's talking about that's so phenomenal. I've got to bring, you know, demand down. But he knows what's going on. I mean, the guy's got eyes, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we are now back in a bear market, right? S&P is down a little over 20% for the year. As I've talked with many people on this program before who've invested for long times, like Ted Oakley, who I know you know well, you know, Ted says, look, the way you know a bear market's over is when nobody wants to touch a stock again. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and we're just nowhere even close to that right now. So I guess my question is if you agree we're in a bear market, I mean, is this thing, do you think it's gonna span into 2023? And I don't want to ask you to pick a bottom, but I mean, if you can give any sort of magnitude on how much further you think we have to go down, a little, moderate, or maybe a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see, I think that the S&P will be closer to 3,000 than 4,000 before it's mm-hmm. all done. I do
we're
think
not that, too far from the halfway point yet, right? I mean, we're at 36 something right now.
Yep. But again, we were at 2398 at the COVID lows. You know, our memories are very, very short.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I will reiterate what I've been saying for years. We were going into a recession in 2019. COVID just helped, you know, drop us off that cliff.
Right, right. The yield curve had already inverted. I mean, we knew
we were on our way. We still have to get through whatever it was that was ailing the economy before we decided to have this mother of all inflationary episodes. We've still got to get through what was dragging it down then, which is to your point about Lacey, about, you know, God, let's say we get through this episode, right? We're still back in the old episode. So
All right. Now for the zillion-dollar question, you know, what assets do you see as, you know, offering the best protection? I'll use the word upside, even though I think it's sort of hard to make a short-term case of material upside for many assets right now, at least as long as the dollar keeps rampaging the way that it is. And I'd love for you to, if you wouldn't mind, after you answer the main question, just giving an update on munis, which I know has been an asset class that you have talked about in the past, but I believe are probably getting pretty beat up right now, along with every other bond that's out there. I mean, it's nothing specific against them. It's just everything's getting taken to the woodshed
right
now.
And this is when I'm happy that I own individual municipal bonds, which I've always stressed, mm-hmm. as opposed to a bond fund, because I certainly haven't had any coupons missed. It's not been fun to watch their value decline, but it has been money good.
And but they're nice still providing steady cash flow.
Yes, nice steady cash flow. So I have certainly appreciated that. And there are states like Indiana, there are states like Utah, there are still states out there that, and now you really can see, now that you've seen pensions start to fall out of bed, they're going to start coming out much more frequently with rankings. Here's your best performing to worst performing states. Get a list ready. Be ready. Be ready with the dry powder. Hopefully you have the dry powder, but be ready with the dry powder, because a lot of these are going to be on good sale and there'll be good opportunities to get into them. I can't explain gold. For the life of me, I cannot explain gold. I still own my gold. It's all I can say, because again, we know how gold behaves in times of financial crisis, and we're not in a financial crisis right now.
But yeah. Would you say right now, or would you say yet?
After everything we just talked about, yes, I would have to add the word yet.
Yeah. Okay. I presume you probably think that cash is a pretty good thing to hold right now, despite inflation still being high. You know, is who was it that just said it? I thought it was Jim Rickards, but it wasn't. It was somebody else. That's going to come to me in a minute, but might have been Brent Johnson. But talking about holding cash right now, Rick Rule, that's who it was. The erosion on his cash due to inflation right now, he looks at that as the call option premium to be able to buy everything else at a discount in the future.
Yes, that's a very rational way of looking at it. And you know, just if it makes you feel any better, buy a 2-year treasury, or buy a 1-year treasury, get some yield. At least have your cash offset what inflation is taking away.
Okay. And one idea that's gaining popularity right now is to buy long-dated US treasuries. One, because you're getting some nice yield for the first time in a long time, you know, still not near inflation, but a lot better than it used to buy. And that if the Fed does pivot and works to try to bring rates down, then the value of those long bonds will appreciate substantially because they'll be attractive rates. Do you feel like now is a good time to start sort of, I don't want to say shoving all your assets into the long bond, but maybe beginning a dollar cost average program, or at least gaining some exposure?
Yeah, I think that this is definitely a good time. And I will be the first to tell you that I was early on long maturity rates. And it's been interesting to see how illiquid they are behaving, how illiquid the longer maturity markets are. But I certainly think that you're going to get to a point where you really do need to be stepping in.
Yeah. And also too, it's kind of interesting about the long end of at least the US Treasury bond market is you may get that appreciation of the bond, not from a Fed pivot, but because of financial crisis where the rest of the world just rushes in there for safety as well, right?
And so, you're going to see pensions and life insurance companies who actually need long paper really start to come in.
To move in there. All right. Well, look, Danielle, it's been another fascinating discussion with you. I always feel like I could do a 5-hour interview with you. I'm excited that I'm going to get to see you at the New Orleans conference in just a couple of weeks. Folks, if you have any interest in going to that conference, I'll put a link to it in the description of this video below. But Danielle, for folks that have really enjoyed getting to know you through this conversation, would like to follow you and your work, where should they go?
Well, come to quillintelligence.com, first of all, and follow me on Twitter at DeMartinoBooth. But take our research and go to my YouTube channel and watch the video with Lacey Hunt. It's phenomenal.
Couldn't agree more.
It's just phenomenal.
Couldn't agree more. All right, folks. Well, Danielle, look, thanks so much. Look forward to having you back on the program again soon to give us an audible call on how things develop over the next couple months.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Adam.
Well, all right. Now's the time on the channel where we bring in the lead partners from New Harbor Financial, one of Wealthion's endorsed financial advisory firms, to both to react to what Danielle said, but also to talk about what's been happening in the markets over the past week. And a lot has been happening in the past 24 hours. So guys, we got a lot to talk about here. Real quick, why don't we just do a quick debrief on the interview there with Danielle. Mike, I'll start with you. I'll let you react any way you want to, but it's so funny because I do not select for this. I just bring in the experts who I think have a good bead on the topic we want to dive into. But more and more these days, when asked, people are sort of describing the New Harbor portfolio when they're recommending, you know, when I ask them what assets folks should be, you know, prioritizing right now. And if I took good notes here with Danielle, she thinks the S&P is more likely than not to head down to at least around 3,000 or so. That's a, you know, still like a 15% correction or more from here. So she's just basically saying this is the time to build dry powder, which she talked about being cash and short U.S. treasuries. She's holding her gold and saying, you know, probably not a bad time to dollar cost average in the long U.S. treasuries. That's not too far off from how you guys are allocated right now, right?
Not far at all, Adam. I really enjoyed that talk, and don't want anyone to think that this is an echo chamber here at Wealthion. There's a lot of good experts all saying the same thing. I think the message is pretty consistent that this is a dangerous place. You don't get away with 14 plus years of monetary magic and pushing valuations beyond anything we've ever seen before in history in this country, even including 1929. You don't get away with that without some type of risk to the system. And so now we're starting to see these risks come out. Now the Fed is tightening because the Fed has to tighten. Inflation has been pretty high and in your face. I was shopping last night and surprised, you know, with some of the things that I'm seeing, you know, a pound of coffee, well over $10, $12, $15, for instance, just a lot of different examples. I can see that the prices are going up, and that politically is a very difficult thing to stand. So Fed Chair Powell says that he's serious about inflation. Danielle talked in that, in her talk about, in his press conference, he talked about being serious about it and making reference to the dot plot and things like that. There's no doubt that Powell's serious about it. My only question is why now? You know, it's not really a mistake now to tighten and to take care of inflation. It was really a mistake to have these 14 years of ridiculous monetary policy. And she talked a little bit about the fact that we've created the most egregious wealth transfer in U.S. history, a period that's rife with, you know, kind of an ostentatious flavor. And there's a lot of risks. There's a lot of social risks to that. You know, we're talking about neighbor against neighbor. You know, that person's doing great. I'm not. A vast majority of this country really never took the ride up in this wealth effect. And frankly, they're seeing, you know, they're seeing the effects in inflation now. So stock market valuations remain excessive. We too think we could take a quick trip down to the low 3000s. We can't predict when that would happen. That's low 3000s on the S&P 500, by the way, maybe 3200 would be a technical level of support. Can't predict when that will happen or what the path will be. If we've learned nothing else in the last 10 or 12 years, it's that buy the dip is absolutely relentless until we finally break and get that first elevator drop down. That will change sentiment for a little while. It feels like it's going to happen soon. I don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but that's the downside risk here. And we're playing, you know, we're playing it that way very cautiously. We've got a high level of cash and we're picking our places to try to tactically layer into the market as we see further declines. So I'll stop there for a bit.
All right, John, we'll come to you. We'll let you layer on whatever you want to that. Maybe one thing I'll note that you can comment on if you feel like, but you know, Danielle, who is one of our most experienced Fed watchers, because she used to actually work for the Dallas Fed, said that she was, you know, really sort of amazed at how Powell has, basically brought everybody around him onto the same page and really sort of, you know, now that he's renewed his chair, seemed to be really important for him to visually show the world that I and my team are united, that we are going to do whatever it takes to get inflation down. I want to use that as the jumping off point into our next discussion after I let you answer, which is going to be about what happened with the Bank of England yesterday, because we had a bank didn't technically pivot policy, but certainly a major capitulation that's having shockwaves as we still talk here. So let me hand the football to you, John.
Yeah, the fact that Danielle was such an inside figure inside the Fed, I think really lends a lot of credibility to her observations and comments. Referencing the Bank of England's, no other way you can put it, panic move yesterday to defend the bond market in UK government bonds. Couple things I want to call out in Danielle's comments. First of all, she talked about the emphasis on the dot plot, and I'll come back to that in a second. But also in the ways that the Fed, going back to the 1920s, would traditionally step in to ensure financial stability. it was done through a mechanism called the discount window. And these new novel creatures of quantitative easing has been this modern version of that. And we may very likely revert back to it. But let's talk about the UK move. So what happened, the Bank of England was days away from starting to systematically sell down its balance sheet, you know, essentially quantitative tightening. And the bond market in the UK absolutely freaked out. The highest monthly rise in UK bond yields since 1957, I think, an absolute, you know, rocket ship move higher in bond yields, which means the bond prices sold off dramatically. And what seems to be coming to light is that the real flashpoint that caused the Bank of England to say, hey, even though we said we're a few days away from starting to sell down these bonds, we're actually going to intervene and buy bonds, right? Essentially telegraph doing quantitative easing. And it's coming to light that perhaps the break point that caused that sudden change in tone and messaging was some pension funds in the UK were seemingly about, you know, to suffer some systemic failures or stresses that were really, really shocking. You know, basically margin calls, and you know, we might as well call it a financial stability crisis was about to unfold, is what seems to be coming to light. So this was a panicked move. It wasn't a premeditated, thoughtful move. It was panic in the face of a likely smoldering crisis. Adam, I'll pause there. It seems like you might want to inject. I do have a couple of comments I want to make on what Danielle said, though, in relation to that.
Okay, well, we'll get back to that. But yeah, just so what you talked about there. So this is why tracking policy really matters, folks, because like it or not, it's really what drives action here. So as Mike said, it was bad policy that got us to the place where we've had these massive asset overvaluations and that have made the system so unstable. It's policy that got us the raging inflation that we've had, you know, with all of the monetary and fiscal stimulus over the past 2 years. And it's now policy that is driving the action, you know, in the markets, in the financial system this year. And the UK example is so important because John just did a good job sort of talking about the reasons for the desperate, you know, reversal that the Bank of England just made. But it was also policy that sort of served as the trigger here. The British government just announced its plans to go ahead with a debt-funded tax cut that I think, you know, the bond market said, hey, look, you know, we are already at a debt, you know, very uncomfortable debt levels here. If you're actually going to load the system with a lot more debt here in the short term with a tax cut that's probably going to actually also be inflationary when we're trying to bring inflation down, the bond market just said, you know what, I need higher rates now to compensate for this additional risk that you guys are injecting into the system here all of a sudden. And then this started a cascade. And I don't know if we've got time to really get into all the cascade, but John, you mentioned that what seemed to be the real fear here was that some pension funds were getting in trouble. The way I've read it so far is that most pension funds in the US were getting in trouble. And what happens here is the value of the bonds, or what are called gilts in the British system, were beginning to plummet as interest rates were just skyrocketing. And I'll find a chart here to show folks exactly how extremely interest rates just started spiking on the gilts. And because those prices just were in free fall, the pensions were starting to get margin calls, right? And so they were having to sell collateral to make up for those margin calls, which was beginning to, you know, bring the markets down and stuff. But a lot of them were beginning to run out of collateral, and they were starting to sell their own gilts, which was basically pushing the price of gilts further down, which was making the balance sheets of the pensions even lower, triggering more margin calls. And you get this vicious cycle on the way down. And that's what the Bank of England stepped in to try to prevent from just becoming this systemic, you know, watershed meltdown. And in many ways, people this morning are using, you know, narrowly averted Lehman crisis as a term to describe this. And we're not out of the woods yet. And, you know, what was interesting is markets reacted the way they used to, which is, oh, okay, central bank has reverted back to easing. That means all the other central banks are going to ease, and that's good for stocks. And the stock market jumped up yesterday. And I think as people have really digested just how unstable the system is, and that, as you said, John, this wasn't a premeditated move. This was a panicked act of desperation. People are beginning to realize this system is much closer to failure than we feel comfortable with. And as we're talking this morning here on Thursday, markets are open substantially down. And, you know, I think everybody is kind of waiting with bated breath for the next shoe to drop here. So anyways, I'll hand it back to you, John, but I wanted to demystify this for people, because I know a lot of people have been asking this morning, what the heck just went on yesterday? And it's a pretty major development. This is the kind of thing I think we can expect to see more of in countries around the world, as basically we're now approaching the limits of policy.
Yeah, I want to bring it back to the psychology that these policies have instilled in investors. We have conversations with clients and prospective clients all the time. And increasingly, there's wide consensus across that population that we talk to, that they agree that these markets feel very precarious, feel very artificial, very prone to collapse. But the ingrained thinking is that, well, yeah, they should fall, but the bank, central banks will come in at some point and keep them, right? That's so ingrained in the psyche that folks have a hard time believing things can really drop in a meaningful way. What I think Danielle pointed out, and she played on some comments that that Lacey Hunt talked about in your Wealthion conference on Saturday, is we may very well be at the point where these policies will be forced to be reined in by politicians. And for example, Danielle talked about at the point where the Fed's operations are losing money. She talked about it, and I think she knows this, but for the listeners to drive a point home, we're at that point right now. They are paying out $300 billion in interest to banks, basically as a free handout, essentially, for reserves that banks have parked at the Federal Reserve. And they're taking in only about $200 billion in interest payments on the bonds that they bought with printed money. So they're losing to the tune of about $1 billion a year. This adds to our federal deficit. So as Danielle pointed out, they need to go to Congress and say, hey, keep us afloat, right? So Lacey speculated that we may very well be at a point where the politicians say, you know, we need to rein this in because we cannot justify a widening budget deficit. And we need to essentially take quantitative easing out of the Fed's hand and put it back in our hands. And what I think is interesting is Danielle talked about the way things used to be done wasn't by bailouts, wasn't by papering things over at taxpayers' expense. It was by the shameful act, but necessary act of making failed institutions come to the discount window, which is what the Fed was supposed to be at its inception, the lender of last resort, to allow an institution to fail, but fail in an orderly way that is public and shameful, but it has to be done. Sheila Bair has, you know, gone time and time again about how things were done wrong in the financial crisis, that all these banks that had to be bailed out could have been reorganized, could have been brought into insolvency in an organized way, but instead these policies were there to bail them out. We very well are likely at a point where that tool chest, even if they're tempted to want to use it, they may get taken away from them. So I just want to instill in folks this you know, persistent idea that the feds can, or the federal banks can always bail us out, may be running out of true steam.
Well, I think there are a lot of listeners who are probably cheering to hear that and hoping that that's what comes to pass. Now, no doubt, if we let the overexposed weaker players, the big ones, you know, fail here, there's going to be a lot of short-term pain associated with that. But that is the clearing of the malinvestment that we've needed for so many decades that we haven't allowed to happen, right? You know, hopefully, you know, main point here is that is actually sort of the true and beneficial working of capitalism, right? Which is weeding out the dead weight that shouldn't be there to let better models, to let better players step in. It's the creative destruction that makes capitalism successful, which we have been keeping at bay by this, you know, intervention and very preferential intervention, I should add, by the central banks, you know, with the too big to fail players and actually just many, many players that even aren't too big to fail and should fail, but don't. So I think, you know, we can, this is something we can definitely watch to see if the discount window comes back into play here. You know, another thing that that Danielle through Lacey said, or Lacey through Danielle said, is you know, everybody's expected if the Fed changes policy here, they're expecting a 180 policy change, meaning reverting from tightening back to easing. And Danielle said, you know what, they just might stop tightening, right? Like they may take quantitative easing off the table, and doing nothing might become the new easing, right? And I would cheer that over the Fed doing something. But if the Fed really doesn't have quantitative easing as a tool, then the calculus for asset prices as currently priced here changes incredibly dramatically. So anyways, this is again why tracking policy is so important. And if any of these changes, you know, looks like it's going to happen, we'll let folks know about it here. All right, Mike, well, look, let me hand it back to you here. You know, chime in on anything you want to say about what's going on right now with the shockwaves that are still rippling through the markets from the Bank of England's actions. But as we begin to sort of wind up here, I'd love to just sort of ask my question. I ask you quite frequently about, you guys talk to real investors all day long. That's your job. You talk to clients, you talk to prospective folks, you're doing the consultations we offer to people for free. Given that you've got your finger on the pulse of the mindset of the average investor right now, is there any particular counsel that you would want to share right now?
Yeah, let me just add to one thing that John said. John's right. The Fed, you were losing about what, $100 billion a year in interest on excess reserves relative to the interest that's coming in on the existing portfolio, the Fed balance sheet. But also, there's about $10 trillion on the balance sheet, and interest rates just went up at the most rapid pace in history in such a short period of time. The 10-year yield is around 4%. It was, you know, 1% not too long ago. And just looking at some numbers, long-term bonds, if you measure it by looking at TLT, is down 30% year-to-date. And another fact that maybe people don't realize is the Fed is probably running about a $1 trillion loss, unrealized loss, on their $10 trillion balance sheet. So not only do we have negative interest rate or negative cash burn rate of $100 billion or so a year, there's probably a mark-to-market loss of about $1 trillion on the balance sheet, which is all of our money, the public's money. You know, that really crosses the line over into spending policy that only the legislators should have. So I do kind of hope that we see some reform. I know Danielle talked about that. It's probably going to take a little pain to get there, to get some reform on central banking, on the Fed, but it's a pretty big number. So let me quickly answer the second part of your question.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but as you do, just given what you just said there, you know, so we're the end of September here in 2022, and the stocks are down, you know, and the S&P, let's say, is down on average, what, at this point, like 24%. Okay. And bonds are now, you know, back down a good amount for the year. I don't know, it's double digits for sure.
It's about 30% on TLT.
Okay. So that's a big one on TLT. Maybe less on shorter dated bonds, mm-hmm. but still substantial. So there's been no place to hide this year, right? So there's a lot of people out there who have a traditional portfolio, whether it's 60-40 or whether it's weighted in stocks or weighted in bonds, no matter what your weighting is here, you've lost a fair amount so far this year. So if you can just sort of take that into your answer, that I'm guessing you're being contacted. I know the New Harbor clients have fared much, much better on a relative basis, given your very conservative allocation. But I assume you've got to have a lot of people calling you with the question of, I just lost a lot of money. I'm realizing I couldn't afford to lose. And the prospects right now for the market still look pretty grim. In other words, it could go down even further. You know, how are you counseling those people?
I suppose it depends upon whether they're existing clients or if they're not. We are down low single digits in our portfolio. We're not happy about it, but the two main components that we have been under severe pressure in the recent month or so, that being gold and gold miners and long-term bonds. Long-term bonds, we think, are drastically oversold here and will likely see a flight to safety if and when we get a deeper pullback in the S&P. But we have very little net stock market exposure. Our biggest exposure to fluctuations is in gold miners. You can look at a symbol like GDX and in long-term bonds, which we have for a trading position, something like TLT. For people, clearly, even existing clients are concerned about weakness in those areas. But the important thing is that we don't have exposure to downside crash risk that we think that the S&P does have.
And right. We will look and, to and be sorry to interrupt, but on a number of your larger long positions, like for the miners, you guys have hedges on there too, right?
Absolutely. We've got put protection on our miners. We do our best to neutralize the cost of that insurance over time when we can by selling calls to pay for that. But at present, right now, out till the October expiration, we've got put protection just below the current price in our gold mining position. So again, we're looking to be tactical on declines in the market. We haven't really seen it kind of break open to the downside yet. That thing that I call the elevator drop, I think that's coming at some point soon. For people that aren't clients and people that are calling in and maybe concerned about the market, there is a growing level of concern. We had that massive bounce off the June low. It was plus 20% over 6 weeks. And a lot of people kind of felt relieved, like, I don't really have to worry yet. I don't have to do anything yet. In fact, I think I'll wait until we get a bigger melt up or closer to the high watermark, and then I'll sell. That's starting to reverse. It's a dangerous thing to have that feeling that it's getting back to normal, particularly in a hyper overvalued market. So we saw a lot of that in the last month or so. Now we're starting to see people concerned, like, wow, this thing may be real. We may be going down. I should take some defensive action. I don't really think we've seen the totality of the first kind of elevator drop down in the market. Normally a market will break hard, and I mean more than your typical 20 or 24%. You might go down 30%. That would take us down into the low 3000s on the S&P and then bounce around for a while, and then likely take another leg lower, and then maybe even another leg lower. That's what a true bear market does. And that would be over a span of maybe 12 or even 18 months, which is another year from now. We might see another additional loss like that. So there's plenty of time to take defensive action. Our counsel to people is to take some defensive action now. If you believe we're in a true bear market, which we do believe, then you're going to want to lighten up into any bounce you get. A day like yesterday, and there's going to be more of those in the future. Do something. Don't get frozen. Sell a piece, then sell another piece until you get to a level that you feel comfortable with. We think that you should be below about a third stocks right now, maybe 30% or less. And the stocks that you do have should be concentrated in value sectors, energy, materials, that type of thing, gold miners. We have, for the very little piece of stock exposure we have it well hedged, and we could talk to people about how to do that. We're happy to counsel anybody, and there's a growing level of concern, and what we really want to do is help people get unfrozen before kind of the panic point, because if we do get that swift move down, a lot of people are going to feel very frozen, and that's not a good feeling.
Right. Or you know, if that turns out to be the watershed that precedes the bottom of the bear market, you know, might influence a ton of people to liquidate right as things, you know, begin to turn around. So I was just interviewing Gordon Long the other day, which actually, folks, fantastic, fascinating interview. If you haven't seen it yet, we talked a lot about the current dollar strength and the implications that that's having, as it's just this juggernaut out there in the world, creating a lot of the pressures that are manifesting in places like the UK right now. And if you haven't seen that, folks, I'll put up a link to it here to go watch after this. But Gordon said, you know, this is textbook bear market. I mean, Mike, you were talking about how people who had been nervous, you know, coming into June with the decline in the first half of the year, were all of a sudden, you know, feeling kind of confident again after the July and early August, severe bounce there. And as we were saying all along the way, hey, one of the hallmarks of bear markets is that they have these big rallies that their job is to sucker everybody back in. and then pull the rug out from under them again and bring things even lower. And that seems to be what's happening right now. It could very well be exactly what's in play right now. So we have to be very cognizant of the intent of a bear market to manipulate our emotions, right? That's why the plan is so important. You've got to trust the plan and take the emotion out of it. Mike, you mentioned that you guys were down, what I think you said, low single digits. I know you'd love it to be better than that, but man, low single digits versus the numbers we were throwing out there for, you know, the S&P and the long bonds losses. I mean, that's amazingly wonderful relative performance. So congratulations on you guys. And I just want to emphasize that because it shows what putting the right plan together and having hedges in places can do to protect you. And of course, you need to have that stuff in place before the market action transpires, right? It's like, you know, trying to rush out after your house burns down to buy fire insurance. Well, it's not nearly as useful at that point, right? So, all right. As we wrap things up here, John, I guess I'll let you have the last word. I mean, it seems like there's a lot still playing out in real time in terms of the aftershocks of what just happened yesterday. We will be tracking them very closely here and doing our best to make sense of this stuff for folks. Any bits of parting advice for folks as we wrap things up here?
Our advice always is to make sure to bring it back to your own life. It's so easy to get caught up in the headlines or the victory lapping of one's neighbors or friends in terms of what their investments did or didn't do. And all the while forgetting what your assets mean to your life. You know, there are some folks that have very large cushions in the assets they've saved and don't need to take risk. And you know, we just want to emphasize that. But there's also folks that need to still make good returns and forward progress in their hard-earned savings. But one of the worst ways to accomplish that goal is to unwittingly suffer a very large decline of, you know, 30, 40, 50% that becomes very hard to dig out of. Small pullbacks are relatively easy to pull out of with diligence, but it's the big declines that can be devastating and game ending, in fact. And just to emphasize where we are now, the valuations are still extreme. The only times in history where valuations have been exceeded right now has been the last year or so in the face of all the stimulus from COVID. We're right at roughly at the levels where we were in the tech bubble, roughly at the levels in 1929 before the Great Depression. We're way more of a value than 2007 before the housing bust. So there's plenty of reason and fuel for valuations to go down substantially from here, even if there are, as Mike talked about and you emphasized, Adam, and we believe is the case, points where they will find support, where we'll find some rallies that will just sucker people into thinking that the worst is over. But the real ultimate potential downside is far down from here, in our opinion, and the data speaks to that.
Okay. All right. Well, very important. Very well said, John. All right. Well, I've got a couple of free resources for folks, including one or two new ones. So folks, stick around to hear them real quick. The first is you hopefully folks saw the video I did, about a week or so ago, about Van Halen and the brown M&Ms. And basically the point of that video was to talk about how having the right indicator can make all the difference in terms of your outcome. And as part of Wealthion's recent conference we just had, I asked the speakers as well as a bunch of other members of the Wealthion faculty for their own personal brown M&Ms that they use as sort of cheat codes to get a sense for, you know, where things are headed. It was fascinating. It's an amazing video. That video right now is only available to the folks who registered for the conference. But going forward, since folks loved those insights, they asked me to keep asking that question of new guests. So I asked it of Danielle. She gave a very, very short answer, but it's a very great indicator that should be on your radar if it isn't already. To find out what it is, just go to wealthion.com/M&M. And that's M ampersand symbol M. And going forward, as I ask more guests to share theirs, I'll continue adding them to that URL. So over time, we're going to have a really big repository of, you know, our experts' sort of top shortcut data sets that they look at to get a really good, quick sense of where the market's headed. So that's a great resource to go check out after this video. Secondly, we are continuing the practice of me capturing my top takeaways from these guest interviews that I'm doing. I've written one up for Danielle. So if you haven't read that yet, just go to wealthion.com/AdamsNotes. And my hope there is you can still take as many notes as you want in these videos. But my hope is if you don't have the time to do so, you can always go to Adam's Notes and get, you know, what my key takeaways were. Third, I mentioned we had the conference last week. We have all the replay videos. I've already put out a couple of videos telling folks how to get those. But if you haven't watched them and you are interested in seeing the replays of the conference, you can go purchase them over at wealthion.com/conference. Now, those replay videos were emailed out to everybody who registered for the conference. For one reason or another, some folks didn't see the email. Maybe it went in their spam folder. So I've been getting, you know, a couple emails a day from folks saying, hey, when are you going to send the replay videos out? I've emailed those people back with the replay links, but I just want everybody who registered, who's watching, to know if you didn't get them and are wondering where they are, they've already been sent out. So if you can't find them in your inbox, just email us at info@wealthion.com and we'll email you back directly the replay videos. But please email us from the email address you used to register for the conference, because that's how we're going to confirm you actually did register. All right. And then last, just a reiteration, Mike, John, and Danielle all did a great job of reemphasizing how this is such a confusing, uncertain, treacherous time for regular investors. And, you know, as always, we recommend you work under the guidance of a professional financial advisor who understands all the macro risks that Danielle, Mike, and I talked about it here. If you've got a good one, great, stick with them. But if you don't, or if you'd like a second opinion of one who does, maybe even John and Mike and their firm themselves, just go to wealthion.com and you can get a free consultation with these guys. Doesn't cost you anything, no strings attached. They'll just tell you what they think you should do, given your personal situation. And, you know, you can implement it yourself. You can implement it with your existing advisor, or you can talk more to our endorsed advisors if you like. And then last, if you enjoyed having Danielle on this program, would like to see us bring more guests of her caliber back on this program, please support this channel by hitting the like button and then clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. Mike and John, we are getting into the very tumultuous, very interesting, but very concerning times. Who knows what's going to happen next from here, but whatever does happen, I'll look forward to tracking it with you guys here on the program and trying to make sense of it for our viewers. Thanks so much for joining me for another week, John and Mike. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
Thanks so much, Adam. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Adam. See you next week.
If you'd like to schedule a consultation with one of the financial advisors at New Harbor Financial, simply go to wealthion.com. These consultations are completely free and there are no strings attached. The good folks at New Harbor will simply answer any questions you have about your investment goals or your portfolio and give you their best advice given their latest market outlook. They're willing to do this because they care about protecting people's wealth, and because Wealthion has connected them with so many thoughtful investors just like you over the past decade. We started doing this because so many people have approached us in frustration, looking for a solution because they're feeling out of alignment or downright ridiculed by the standard financial advisors who have been managing their money. You know the type. The kind that just pushes all of your money into the market, scoffs at the idea of owning gold, and when you bring up concerns about the market's sky-high valuations, they say, "Don't worry, the market will always take care of you." For many of the reasons discussed in today's video, we think this is one of the most challenging and treacherous times in history for investing. We strongly believe that today's investors are best served working in partnership with a conscientious professional financial advisor who understands the risks in play. Now, we're agnostic which professional advisor you work with, as long as they're good. If you're already working with one, that's fantastic. Stick with them. But if you don't, or are having trouble finding one you respect or trust, then consider talking to John and Mike and the team at New Harbor. Now, for those about to ask, yes, there's a business relationship between Wealthion and New Harbor, which we've put in place to make sure everything is handled according to SEC regulations. All the details on this are clearly provided on the Wealthion.com website. Also, it's important to note that New Harbor is able to work with U.S. citizens, green card holders, and those with existing assets in the USA. but for regulatory reasons, they aren't able to take on non-US clients. All right, with all that said, if you'd like some insight and guidance on how to protect your wealth during this unprecedented time in the markets, go to wealthion.com to schedule your free consultation with the good folks at New Harbor. Thanks for watching.